Welcome to Health Hats, learning on the journey towards best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, a two-legged, cisgender, old white man of privilege living in a food oasis who can afford many hats and knows a little bit about a lot of healthcare and a lot about very little. Most people wear hats one at a time, but I wear them all at once. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in the awesome circus of healthcare. Let's make some sense of all of this. Regina Holiday, known worldwide for her walking gallery, lives in God's country near the Cumberland Gap, Maryland, close to my old stomping grounds in West Virginia. The walking gallery has hundreds of jackets painted by Regina and her artist colleagues. The backs of the jackets tell our stories, our advocacy, and our life. The painting is free. We supply the jacket. We wearers agree to wear the jacket at conferences and meetings. Advocacy can often be lonely work, swimming upstream. When I spot someone else with a jacket, I know immediately that this is my peep. When I wear my jacket, people come up to me and they want to hear my story. And I know you'll be surprised to know that I have a story ready. The first time I met Regina in person, she blew me away. Her passion was almost more than I could bear. Regina hosts the best conference retreat going, dollar for dollar, pound for pound. The Cinder Blocks Conference is in Grantsville, Garrett County, Maryland, equidistance from Pittsburgh and D.C. They're small, 25 to 50 people over several days. Regina knows how to blend local action with national policy. I think I've attended four or five of her conferences over the past 9 years. I always feel rejuvenated and inspired. My Health Hats logo was drawn by the St. Louis artist Danny McGinnis Jr. while we were driving from D.C. to Grantsville for Cinder Blocks. Please bear with our mediocre connection. Wi-Fi is spotty in Grantsville. The substance is worth the minor annoyances. Regina, I'm so glad you could join me.
Glad to be here.
I miss coming to visit you.
Yeah, I miss everyone coming, or the people who come coming. Yeah. This world of COVID-19 is very lonely for many, many folks.
Really, I think loneliness is really a very big deal here. As we began our conversation, I started to describe a dilemma I feel as an advocate for equity and inclusion, trying to increase seats at the table of governance, design, operations, and learning in healthcare. Even if we could wave our magic wand and make what we want happen, there's lots of variation in the readiness of professionals and experts to seek and utilize advice and the willingness of people who are experts with lived experience to offer advice. I'm the token patient on several technology and decision support initiatives. What advice do the professionals, whether they're informaticists or clinicians, seek from experts with lived experience that the professionals are willing to hear and act on? And then what does it take for people to be up to speed so they can give good advice?
Well, I mean, I think part of the challenge is people who are in the patient space for a long time as a patient voice often flip sides, actually. They often become professional, right? They often become, they're so enmeshed in groups that are from the provider side in whatever kind of application that is, whether it be insurance or data or a medical practitioner, and they get to the point where they're speaking like them. You know, like, it's a challenge. Right, like the tokenism, the challenge is, you know, you can become part of the group and lose that reason you're there in the first place. That's one of the challenges.
Okay.
That happens.
So losing the outside looking in perspective.
Correct. Yes, that happens. Okay. A lot of people, yeah. So it's constantly working on reigniting the perspective of outsider, right? is really, really important. And sometimes that comes through enmeshing oneself more deeply in a patient community that's not necessarily getting invited to those meetings, right? And that can be done online. It doesn't actually have to be done in person.
Right.
But you realize how perspectives can shift and how code switching can happen, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of it.
Yeah.
There are challenges. I mean, part of it is just keeping that, and through caregiving too. I mean, caregiving can give you that experience too. Being whether you're the primary patient oneself or the caregiver who's deeply empathetic for the patient,
mm-hmm.
both work. I mean, if you can put yourself in the other person's shoes, but it's constantly recreating the fuel that got you where you are in the first place.
Right.
And
right.
Always be identifying with that source. I find one of the reasons I believe change does not happen as rapidly as we would hope it would, positive change, is that people lose sight of why they got so excited in the first place.
Aha, uh-huh. Yeah. So what their fire was.
Yeah, what was your fire and what will get you back to your fire?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm definitely susceptible to what you're describing, being that I'm a two-legged cisgender old white man of privilege wearing all these hats, and I'm the token and caregiver representative on, you know, initiatives, is that, you know, I'm susceptible to that. I would say recently the most successful that I've been is when working with a group to figure out what input did that team need. Only patient caregiver experts could provide, people with lived experience. And in the project I was working on was with chronic pain management, and to formulate an ask, you know, this is what we're looking for information about or advice about. And I kept going to the group I was working with, are we asking this because we really need the advice and we're going to use it? And so then we went to a group of people at the PFA network, Libby Hoy's group, and we had a call together and we laid out a little background, and then we laid out the question, and then they responded. And actually, it was fabulous because the advice we got was very useful, able to implement it, you know, incorporate it into the design of what we were working. And so that felt really good to me. But man, it was a shitload of work.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, on the other hand, as a quality management professional, before I was unquote retired, we would have like patient councils, patient family councils.
Right.
It was really hard for that not to be show and tell. Important that we had a group of people that we could sort of bring along and help them learn about parts of the business, and then they would share about their perceptions about the business or the service, and we could put that together. But that was also a shitload of work.
You just can't have coffee and donuts and meet once a month and think that, you know, it's there's going to be value out of it.
No, I mean, you need more than that. I mean, one of the places I was most excited about how they incorporated the patients was Bell and Health in Green Bay, Wisconsin, because they actually did it. Like they enmeshed patients in every working group.
Who was that?
Bell and Health, Bellin, in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
I can look it up. Yeah.
Looking them up because I mean I don't know where their program is at this point.
Right.
But when I there, I was really very excited to see that they had gone beyond the patient family advisory council and had gone to fully enmeshing people in all the different working groups. So, you know, regular Joe Schmo is on the EMR working group, right? Mm-hmm. And going to meetings.
Yeah. Right.
Like, yes, this is it. You know? And that was exciting because you bring in that voice of non-jargon, right?
Yes.
And like, wait a second.
So, Regina, one of the things that I so admire about you is, well, there's several things, but the one I'm thinking about this minute is how involved you are in your community. When I come for your conferences, the pulse that you seem to have on the community that you live in and your ability to work with clinicians and government officials, citizens of the town or the, you know, how you bring that all together. And it seems like there's something really different about, like, I operate on the federal level a lot.
Right.
And you operate on the neighborhood level. Where I see you really shine is on the local level. What do you think about as you're, you know, bringing all that together?
Well, I mean, it's really important to listen to all sides all the time. So for instance, my Facebook feed is filled with every view and I don't delete people, right? I listen to all of them. Yeah. Everyone has value. I mean, on one topic, they may very much disagree with you, right? But then there's another topic where you guys are very aligned. Mm. And it's, I think, very important to read and listen to people about what they're struggling with and what's making them angry or upset or happy. I find that people get in bubbles way, way too easily where they're not listening to anybody but their own peer group for the most part. Oh. Like only people they agree with, only people they work with, only, you know, and that's really dangerous because then they start creating policy thinking that's the way the world thinks, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, there's a whole bunch of people who don't think like you at all. So it's right. And also getting down to core, what's the core of this problem? Because a lot of people don't take enough time to talk to someone and develop enough of a relationship to find the core of the problem. The thing is people often, so oftentimes when a person is non-compliant, which is a popular term within healthcare, there's so they're not getting their prescription correct and they're not taking their drugs the right day, the way they're supposed to, because they can't really see the label because their glasses are out of date.
Okay. So
the core of this is they need new glasses. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, but they can't afford new glasses. Mm-hmm. So then you have to know about where can you get glasses? Oh, the Lions Club. The Lions Club will buy you glasses. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it's, they don't have transportation to get to Walmart, which is the cheapest place to get the glasses. Mm-hmm. And then they need transportation to get there, Lions connection to pay for it. They got the glasses. Now they're taking the drugs correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But there was a lot of stuff to get to the core.
I see. And so you're a listener and you're a connector.
Right. So that's what I do. I listen, and then I'm like, okay, so would this be a solution? You know, like, is this the solution, right? But sometimes it's not, so you got to listen more. Yeah. Like, there's something sometimes.
So you're recognized in Grantsville as a resource. How did...
Yes.
You didn't just wave your magic wand and become that. How did that happen?
So when I first moved to this area, I started going to so many different meetings.
Okay.
Like I just joined Rotary. I started going to town council. I, of course, immediately started volunteering at the thrift shop. I mean, every way that I could make sure I was communicating with every facet of society, you know, from the well-to-do, which we go to, like, there's Chamber of Commerce mixers you can go to, you know, like there's every level. There's like, try to meet people at every economic level of the community so that when a problem arises, you have a resource, right? You know, this person needs this and they can help, right? And in a rural community, this is incredibly important because nothing's advertised. Like, people, they come here and then where do you find apartments? It's like, oh, you have to know somebody.
Right.
You know, it's different for folks who live in cities where there's things are advertised, right? So
yeah, I'll bet.
So it's very...
Also need to know somebody.
You need to know somebody, right? I mean, it's yeah.
But no, I get your point, though. You joined and you participated, and you then were recognized as somebody who would do the work. And so then when you identified problems, you had a network of people you could call on to help solve that problem.
Correct.
I didn't meet you in the local, you know, because you're in Grantsville and I live in Boston. But so I met you on the national stage with your walking gallery. And I remember,
right.
I don't know where I met you first. It was probably M's or something, and you were painting these jackets. So that's where you've been more on a, you know, worldwide stage. Building the jackets are beautiful, but the thing is the jackets to me. The thing is that I would go places and I would see other people with jackets and I would know, okay, these are my peeps and I better get to know them because Regina has vouched for them by making a jacket. But you created a lot of energy for people to get together and solve whatever problem you're trying to deal with.
Correct. So I made the walking gallery purposely hard to join.
Okay.
I didn't vouch for people. What they did is vouch for themselves. So So you don't get to be part of this unless you work at it. Right? So you had to be willing to mail a jacket.
Okay.
You have to be willing to, you had to do a lot of steps to
right.
be part of the movement. Now, there's no economic barrier. Anyone can join. All you got to have is a jacket, right?
Yeah.
But steps, you've got to be willing to put your story out there. You got to be willing to be real and authentic. You've got to have a social media voice.
Mm-hmm.
And these are steps. And there are people who can't join the movement because they won't do the steps.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then you're right. Like, you see there's no painting on their back. You know, like,
right.
Okay.
Right.
You know, this person may not be the person that you would have put a lot of energy into because they didn't want to put their energy out there, right? So, you know, it's interesting the people who walk away.
It is interesting. I mean, so tell us a little bit about how did you get the idea of doing it? What was the germ of this?
Well, first of all, of course, began with the paintings I did about my husband back in the summer of 2009 in his medical journey. And those were large-scale murals. And you do large-scale murals outside in temperate weather. Mm-hmm. So I did three of them between the late spring to late summer of 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then it got cold in Washington, D.C., and you cannot paint murals once it's cold.
Right.
You can't do that to work. So I had a lot of Twitter friends, and that's where we first met, I'm pretty sure, with Twitter, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it gets confusing, but it's just like, it's either Society for Fisheries Medicine or it's Twitter.
Okay.
But either way, I met a lot of people on Twitter, and one of them I met was a woman named Jennifer McCabe, mm-hmm. Jen McCabe. And she was going to the American Medical Association meeting that year
mm-hmm.
and realized she was invited to participate, but no patients were. Patients were not invited. They were not in the room. There was no representation of them. So what she suggested was I paint my husband and my story, our story, on the back of her jacket that she was going to wear every day of the event.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there were three jackets that of, you know, that she had wanted painted. And they were all focused on data access, because that's my core mission and advocacy mm-hmm. is real-time data access. So that's what all three jackets were focused on. And so she wore them and people saw them.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ronnie from Google Health wanted mm-hmm. one. Again, it was my story on his back, but about Googling healthcare data. Okay. And then there was another woman named Shara Bell, who was working for a company called Unergy, which was caregiving. So it was me and a caregiver and my husband on her back about caregiving, right? So these were called art jackets. And they were all still basically small-scale murals. They were out there, public. That's the key, public, not private, not stuck in a wall in a museum, but out there speaking to the common man.
Mm-hmm.
But then I went to this Kaiser Permanente Center for Total Health opening event with my friend Tetaton. And when I got in there, I said, Ted, this is going to be a great space for a gallery show.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no, this is a giant smart wall. you can't do the can't. Because he'd seen me do one gallery show event, Clinovation, where I had big canvases up. And I said, no. It's not going to be on canvases. It's going to be on jackets. But the jackets are now going to be about the person's life. It's their life.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be telling their life, and we'll walk around the room
mm-hmm.
and all learn about each other. And Ted's like, that's an amazing idea. You should do that idea. So we had to get clearance from Kaiser Permanente
mm-hmm.
and it took a little bit to get clearance, but then we had 1 month to get as many jackets done as we could.
Mm-hmm.
And so I and 13 other artists painted for a month and we managed to get 56 jackets done.
Wow.
And that's what started the gallery.
And now what? There's like 500, 600?
There's over, I've got to look at my numbers now, but there's way over 500
mm-hmm.
at this point.
And they're worldwide?
Worldwide. We're in 16 countries. And at this point, we have, I want to think it's 48 artists painting.
Really? I didn't know it was that many.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the number we're at. I could verify.
Yeah, it's all right.
But it's one of those things that, you know, a person can join if they would like to paint a jacket for themselves or another telling their story. The one thing I request is that they accept donations toward the creation of it, toward mm-hmm. the shipping, but you're not buying it. You cannot buy a jacket.
Mm-hmm.
It is not purchased.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing that's hard for some artists to understand, that this is a co-mission, not a commission.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we are working together, my artist vision, your story, to create this piece that will create advocacy
mm-hmm.
and hopefully policy change.
Mm-hmm.
So that was hard for a lot of people to understand. In part, we do that because then people who work in the federal government can be part of the walking gallery.
Oh.
Because they have no value. These jackets have no value.
Now a word about our sponsor, Abridge. Use Abridge to record your doctor visit. Push the big pink button and record the conversation. Read the transcript or listen to clips when you get home. Check out the app at abridge.com. ABRIDGE.com. Or download it on the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Record your healthcare conversations. let me know how it went.
What do you see for your advocacy in the near future?
You know, well, I'm in seminary classes.
Oh,
so,
know that?
Yeah. Yeah. So I took my first, I have three classes coming up later this month that are intensive.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm part of it. I'm part of a track that's for later in life learners, you know, because I'm 48 now. And
You're ancient.
Yeah, I'm ancient. Yes. Yes, indeed. Well, I was very gray during COVID, and I reached out to my beautician. I said, okay, I can either get box color and color my hair, or you could just give me the stuff that I need and I'll do it myself.
Oh.
So you won't get in trouble.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it was so bad. My mother-in-law and father-in-law just were staring at my head every day that I would see them to bring them groceries.
Yeah.
They're like, you look so old.
So seminary. And so what will you do with that?
Well, so in the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, which I am a member of,
mm-hmm.
we have over 600 vacancies on pastors.
Oh.
Bad, in my opinion. And especially we have vacancies in rural communities.
Yeah.
So when we lost our pastor in 2017, I was on the call committee to try to find a new one, and we just got a new one in May. So it took from November of 2017 to May of 2020 to find a pastor.
Wow.
Yeah. So during that time, I felt called to offer my services and try to serve.
Yeah.
And it was a long process just to get approved for candidacy.
Yeah.
You have to have psychological examinations and turn all these things in, and it's a long process, but I got approved. And so now I'm in seminary classes. Why? Like, I explained to them when I was beginning this, though, I'm like, I'm already on God's mission. I'm already a servant of God. I'm already doing mission work. I consider a lot of what I do an act of faith,
mm-hmm.
right? With like some folks would call it a mitzvah. Like, I do this because it is what is good and right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I said, you know, as I go on and add another layer to what I'm already doing, I'm not going to stop what I'm already doing. You know? And they said, that makes sense. You know, like, you obviously are driven and called to do something to make it better. And you never know.
One of the most driven, inspiring people I know. It's remarkable, actually. Just, you know, I mean, I'm glad we're friends, and I'm glad that I see you from time to time, but I like watching you. I like what you're up to, because it's really inspiring. And I like that you take people under your wing and you mentor them and you encourage them to grow and give back. You're really pretty remarkable in that way.
Well, thank you, Danny. It's something I try at all times to do. I've had mentors in my life that made a major difference to me.
Yeah.
And I hope that I can, in some small way, do the same thing for other people.
What should I be asking you that I'm not?
Ah, I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things that with all the crisis that's going on right now, I think a lot of people are very stressed out. Very, very anxious.
Yeah. And
your
community.
So there's a lot of backlash in my community. Our local county commissioners mandated masks.
Okay.
And in the state of Maryland, it was recommended, right? So it wasn't required,
mm-hmm.
but it was recommended. And then now it's mandated.
Okay.
So there's some backlash on that because people. They're very hard to breathe in. You've noticed that.
I just made it back in time. I went for an MRI, my MS, and I had to wear a mask in that tunnel. Oh, my goodness.
That's horrible.
It was hard to breathe. You know, I was a little claustrophobic, and it was really loud. and trying to breathe with that stupid mask on. Yeah. Anyway, okay. So have you had much infection there?
No. Up until we had had a total of 6 cases in our county.
20,000 people in the county, if I recall.
28,000.
How much?
28.
28.
28.
Oh. Yeah.
So we only had 6 cases until they tested a nursing home recently, and that gave us 7 more cases. The nursing home has 7 cases in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like all of them came from one staffer that didn't actually live in our county.
Mm-hmm.
Our numbers are very low.
Yeah.
And our economy, like most of the United States, has been struggling greatly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, your county was struggling before.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah, I mean, like, a lot of people have gardens here already. You know, it was already hard. It's just become harder.
Yeah. Well, honey, I got to go.
Oh, okay. Well, this was great.
It is lovely to talk to you. And you know that I think about you regularly. And we communicate one way or the other. And I look forward to the day I can give you a hug.
Well, I'm very hopeful for next year because next year is the 10-year anniversary of the Walking Gallery.
All right. Well, I'll want to come.
Yes, I will let you be there.
Yeah, cool. Well, take care of yourself. I love you.
Love you too. Take care, Danny.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I feel tension in patient caregiver advocacy and engagement. On the one hand, networking, bridge building, creates connection, influence, trust, and sustains the fire, the passion, and often lonely work. Yet advocacy and engagement are about something. Action, policy, problem solving. Our communities need so much. Accessible healthcare, equitable life, information to make choices. We mortals have limits. Our eyes are bigger than our stomachs. We have to pick our battles, select our minimum viable audience while taking care of ourselves. Regina Holiday inspires me because she is a learning dynamo. She takes her skills, painting, connection, spirit, whatever, to catalyze whoever touches someone she has touched. She's a gift that keeps giving. See the show notes, previous podcasts, and other resources on my website, www.health-hats.com/pod. Please subscribe or contribute. If you like it, share it. Thanks. See you around the block.